June 3rd, 2012, a guy named Zach Conrad goes out for a bike ride.
Yeah, so back at the time this happened, right, I was 36, healthy, and I had just gotten married 2 months prior.
And this is the lady he married.
My name is Maura Conrad, and I'm the wife of Zach Conrad.
Maura and Zach live in the center of Philadelphia in a small row home on a side street. Zach is tall and wiry, unfailingly polite. And on the day of this ride, everything started out pretty normal. Maura, who's a doctor, had just finished up work.
So I was a pediatric resident at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. I'd worked a 24-hour shift and had just come home from that.
And so I picked her up, we'd had breakfast.
They went out to a local spot.
I think Zach had a burrito, and I had a Bloody Mary.
They go back home.
Put her to sleep and headed out for a bike ride.
So Zach is out on this bike trail, carving through the woods. He's planning on riding for about 2 hours, which wasn't unreasonable for him. He'd been doing triathlons and was in pretty good shape. Zach doesn't actually remember what happened next. All the blanks have been filled in by various witnesses.
Biking along and must have realized that something wasn't quite right and stopped, got off my bike, sat down next to a wall and took my helmet off and then proceeded to slump over.
He's splayed out on the ground. He seems passed out. But it's actually worse than that. And that's how a woman, a passerby named Charity, finds him.
Looked at me and realized that it didn't look good, so she came over and called 911, and then sat down and said she tried to talk to me while she waited for help. And then shortly thereafter, two other women, Sally and Kristen, were biking by, and they looked over and also realized that it didn't look good.
So Charity waves them over and explains the situation, that she just found Zach this way and that she's already called for help. And then Sally, who happens to be an emergency room nurse, looks him over.
He was on his side. I remember flipping him over and he was blue. Not moving, not breathing, not reacting. He was out. I thought he was already deceased.
Sally knew what a dead person looked like, and it looked a lot the way Zach looked. But she also knew that in this situation, you've got to at least try CPR. So she gets her friend Kristen, who'd been bike riding with her, into position.
So I quickly told her, I'm going to breathe, you're going to push on his chest, and we're going to count together.
And they start. They're doing CPR on Zach while this crowd is forming around them on the bike path. It takes a bit of time for the ambulance to arrive, or at least it seemed to.
I don't think it was that long. I think those things feel that way in the moment, and I kept thinking, where's help? Where's help?
They didn't quit. They kept going.
One and two and three and four and five.
I'm sure it was messy, it was ugly, and they just kept going.
Even if this is a lost cause, we can't stop. We can't stop. I know if we stop, he will definitely not survive. So that never crossed my mind, stopping, till we got relieved by rescue.
Eventually, the ambulance pulls up, and the EMS workers come running down the path.
They put on the AED, and it recognized the rhythm and shocked me. And it ultimately, I think, took 3 shocks to get my heart going again. And then from there, I was transported to a local hospital.
The ambulance pulls off, with Zach still unconscious in the back. And Sally is left standing there, trying to make sense of what just happened, what she saw.
He had a brand new shiny wedding band on, and that was really sad because I thought, oh my gosh, this young guy who is married to somebody. I thought they're going to take him to the hospital. They're probably going to pronounce him.
Zach, this otherwise healthy 36-year-old, his heart had stopped due to a condition that's really hard to predict. It wasn't a heart attack, which is caused by a blocked artery.
So I was in ventricular fibrillation, which is, you know, I'm not a medical person, but my layman's description is that it just means your heart basically gets out of electrical sync, and it is beating irregularly or in a way that is not allowing it to function properly.
For some reason, Zach's heart just started misfiring and stopped pumping blood. When the paramedic shocked him, the organ started beating again, but it wasn't clear how much damage had been done.
And I do remember that he was, like many cardiac arrest patients, completely unresponsive.
Benjamin Abella is the physician who treated Zach at the hospital of the University of Pennsylvania.
Would not open his eyes, would not move.
While it was his heart that started all this, Abella and his team were worried the lack of blood flow had put Zach's brain in jeopardy. Abella says the hours after a cardiac arrest are really this race against the clock.
And that race against the clock is for irreversible brain injury. And so one of the ways we can affect that injury is to lower core body temperature. We call that therapeutic hypothermia.
Yeah, therapeutic hypothermia, intentionally cooling down the body. So the idea is a lower temperature slows everything down and limits inflammation that could cause complications. At least, that's what experts like Abella think it does.
It's still actually a mystery how hypothermia works to improve survival after cardiac arrest. We know some of the partial mechanisms, reduction of brain swelling, decreased cellular metabolism. So there are definitely ways that we understand, but it's probably far more complex than that.
This isn't exactly an experimental treatment, though. There is clear scientific evidence that it can benefit patients. It's been proven in a number of studies. And while doctors and researchers are still working to refine therapeutic hypothermia, it actually has a long history in medicine.
Although its modern iteration dates from the 1950s, there are actually documented examples of understanding the role of hypothermia as early as Napoleon's invasion of Russia.
We're talking about the year 1812.
There was a surgeon who worked with Napoleon's army who observed that soldiers who were mortally injured but kept cold sometimes made it, as opposed to soldiers who were injured severely but warmed up and brought near the campfire and given warm cognac. They often died.
Okay, so cognac is out. The methods for cooling are vastly improved, too. For many patients, it's now done through an infusion of chilled saline.
It's not as easy as it sounds. There's a technology involved and medications we have to give. But yes, we lower the core body temperature from normal 98.6 Fahrenheit to around 91 to 92 Fahrenheit, which doesn't sound like a lot, but as far as brain processes and body physiology, it's a huge temperature difference.
Zach's wife, Maura, remembers seeing this being done to Zach in his hospital bed.
He's completely asleep, eyes closed. He had a breathing tube, so he was having all the work done for him. He had several different IVs. And then he had sort of these like cool, like water blankets that sort of were underneath his legs and arms and things like that as other ways to help control the temperature of his body.
Zach stayed like this, comatose. His body temperature held down around 91 degrees for 30 hours, kind of the maximum amount of time for therapeutic hypothermia. And those are some long hours when you don't even know if he's going to wake up.
Or, you know, if he was going to have full movements in his body, was he going to be able to, you know, write again? Was he going to be able to have a normal conversation? Was he able to, you know, work his job that he had before? Was he going to be able to work any job? All those sorts of questions that were sort of like constantly luring around. Is that, yes, I wanted him to be safe and I wanted to be alive, but what was his quality of life going to be?
Maura, as a doctor, knew that the outcomes in these situations are usually poor. Only about 10% of people who have cardiac arrest survive. CPR, like Sally and Kristen did to Zach, increases the chances to around 40%. But even then, many people experience long-term cognitive and memory problems. It turned into really just a waiting game to see what would happen to Zach.
The first day or two are really frightening. There's a lot of ups and downs. There's a lot of instability. And Zach had some features of this. And we always counsel patients' families that watching a patient go through this, it's really a marathon, not a sprint. We won't have our answers within the first few hours or even within the first day.
When the time comes, Dr. Abella slowly begins to warm Zach's body back up. And then?
So I think at that moment that he actually opened his eyes, I had walked out of the room, of course, just like when everything good happens. And my parents were there, and so they came running to say, he moved. He's fluttering his eyes and he moved.
Soon Zach is thrashing his arms and legs, pulling at all the cords, sort of in this delirious state.
And he looked at me and I knew he knew it was me, but he didn't quite have the words yet to say very much. I knew he knew that like I was someone he loved and that he wanted me close, and he squeezed my hand. But it took, I think, several hours before he could come up with all the words to sort of fill in those pieces.
By the next night, Zach was fully conscious, chatting.
He was up, he was okay. We went to go get some food to eat and bring it back. And before I knew it, I looked down at my phone and I looked at Facebook, and Zach had posted on Facebook. And he's like, "Hey everybody, I'm okay. Just wanted to let you know, thanks." And I'm like, "Oh my God, he's posting on Facebook. We have to go back. What is going on?"
Zach spent another week in the hospital, during which time he had a device implanted in his body. It monitors his heart rhythm and can deliver a jolt if he goes into cardiac arrest again. And it's not really clear if he will. Doctors still aren't sure why it happened in the first place.
They don't know why. There's no obvious indicators. I don't have any structural abnormalities in my heart. There's no genetic things, markers they can find that indicate that this should have happened. It just did.
That randomness is honestly terrifying. But it's something Benjamin Abella sees over and over. So for him, it's more like a problem to solve. Or maybe the way to think about it is therapeutic hypothermia is a treatment, but it's also playing with time. It's like suspended animation, pausing the body to let it recover.
When you're in the business of treating cardiac arrest patients, some of the language and conversations you have are pretty bizarre. And many of us in resuscitation science throw around terms like "he was dead, now he's not." And we talk in ways that seem bizarre, but it really is a strange and awkward thing, because in every sense of the word, Zach was dead and now he's not. And that's amazing. We're realizing that, yes, death in the first minutes to hours may be a gray area. Historically, it was a very precise line. You were alive, and then you were dead. Not as much so anymore, and we're pushing the boundary further and further, and it makes it very exciting, but it does make for some very strange conversations.
Today, Zach is doing pretty well. He and Maura are busy chasing around their twin one-year-olds, and outside of not remembering the cardiac arrest, his brain and heart are working just fine.